Hello and welcome to Tub Talk, Pop Culture Ranked, I think is the tagline that we're going with. This is a new podcast from the Cage Club Podcast Network. We are four dudes, straight white dudes, which is going to be established very...
Is that how we introduce ourselves now?
We're straight white dudes.
No, but like we
talked about... This is the straight white podcast.
Can you explain who your audience
fucking
is?
Fucking chicks and being white.
So we're four guys in a fantasy baseball league, and we have a lot of opinions about pop culture, and I'm usually just the moderator. My name is Joey Lewandowski. I co-founded the Cage Club Podcast Network, and I am allowing this platform for ranking pop culture here on our network. We are going to kick things off every 2 weeks. We're going to release a new episode. We're going to kick things off with the top 100 songs from each of my three panelists from the 1980s and 1990s.
You're white heterosexual panelists and, with all four working limbs.
Yeah.
Just want to clear up, we're heterosexual white men.
I was going to cut that out, but I mean, now I guess I can't. So
you better cut it out.
We drew inspiration because earlier this summer, Rolling Stone put out their list of the 100 greatest songs of this century so far. So we all have those lists. We're going to record today. That's going to come out next year sometime. But we also are going to start things off with 1980 to 1999. But before we get into there, let us sort of establish our credentials. You know, in terms of our five favorite things of the year, let's just, you know, give a taste of who you are as a person. To my left, first up, Tom Mantzoranis. Tom, what are your five favorite things, moments, events, activities of 2018?
Thank you, Joseph. It's been an interesting year. I mean, I think we can all agree for various reasons. I managed to find five things out of this dumpster fire of a year that actually kind of made it worth it. My number five is legalized sports gambling.
Ooh. Clap, 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 clap.
Boo.
Not that illegal sports gambling has ever stopped anybody from doing it in the past. It certainly hasn't stopped me, but I just appreciate the convenience of it now. I can do it right from my phone, like the lazy asshole that I am, laying on the couch, watching sports, betting in real time. And it's also nice to see New Jersey, which I'm a little sensitive to, like the New Jersey jokes that I get from New Yorkers.
Oh, yeah, we all live in New Jersey.
Yeah. And I work in New York City.
Straight. White.
I work in New York City, and all I hear is jokes about New Jersey. And it's nice that we're actually like taking the lead and kind of getting out in front of something for once. So legalized sports gambling, number five. Number four is a show that was on Netflix this year. It came out of nowhere for me anyway, called The End of the Fucking World.
Ooh.
It wasn't my favorite show of 2018, but it was the most pleasant surprise that I found on TV in 2018. I loved it because it was a show that began super dark and depraved and actually like found humanity as the show went on.
Yeah.
It's short, it's bite-sized, it's eight episodes that are not even like a standard 22-minute network half hour.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, they're like 18 minutes, 19 minutes. The two leads, I don't know how old they are in real life, they play 17-year-olds on the show, are fantastic. It's like a John Hughes film, but like mixed with murder, with lots of murder. It's really good. I highly recommend it.
And Graham Coxon from Blur did the music.
I did not know that. Is that true?
That's the voice of Blur's biggest fan, Bob Fischer.
Wow. You can, if you have a sick day or you're taking days off for the holidays, I watched it all on a sick day. You can knock the entire show out in like 3.5-4 hours.
Yep.
Had a perfect ending.
So that, which is why it's a shame that there's going to be a season two.
But yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Wait, does the world end?
No.
Yes.
Fuck.
No.
Okay.
It does not. Number three is watching television with the closed captioning on. It's something. It's something that I discovered in 2018, and it just made the experience so much better.
This podcast brought to you by WeBuyGold.com and Prilosec.
It's just made the experience so much better. I don't know why. I don't know why I started doing it, but I like it. It's improved my television watching habits.
Because we need a news ticker and a crawl.
What I genuinely think it is that I've always been a visual learner. I've always been one of those people who has to like read something to understand it as opposed to hearing it. And I think that this finally, I was just like, oh yeah, this makes sense. I should be doing this.
I think it also helps me when I do it, pay more attention.
Yeah. Also, too many shows are mixed too low nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, I think
well, Andy Rooney has just joined us.
I think I started doing it because I'm pretty sure, now that I'm thinking about it, that I was watching an episode of The Americans where they were mumbling for 20 minutes, and I was like, what the fuck is going on in this show? And I had to turn the closed captioning on to figure it out.
Did you write them a letter?
I am a 35-year-old straight white male getting older by the second right now. My number two, on a more sincere note, is the NPR Tiny Desk Concerts. I was very grateful for those in 2018. I've been a fan of the Tiny Desk Concerts for a really long time. 2018 made me appreciate them even more. It's a fantastic way to hear the artists you love in a new context, but also to discover new artists. They do a great job of curating the people that they get on it. And I particularly enjoyed what they do for rap music. Rap music is a genre that's not inherently built for live performance, or at least is much harder to do well in live performances. And I feel like the Tiny Desk setup, for whatever reason, brings out the best in a lot of rappers. It makes them think of new ways to bring their songs to life, and I just really appreciate it. I think, you know, two recently, one was Tyler, the Creator's Tiny Desk concert. I don't even know if that was 2018. It might have been last year. Earlier this year, Mac Miller's, who I've never, you know, obviously Mac Miller died earlier this year. I've never been the biggest fan of his. He has some songs that I've loved, some songs that I haven't loved. But I watched right before he died. He did his Tiny Desk concert about a month before he died, right before. And I watched it. A, it was a beautiful presentation of his new album, which is really good. But B, you could see that life was weighing on him. And it was a really incredible kind of 15 minutes of music. So shout out to the Tiny Desk concert people for continuously providing really great performances. My number one should not come as a surprise specifically to Joey, but
Chris Cornell.
No. It's the
ascension of Chris Cornell into heaven where he belongs.
You'll understand these jokes in the next 10 weeks.
Yeah, no, it's not Chris Cornell.
Chris Cornell finally got to go to heaven after bringing us to heaven after
my favorite thing of the year was sharing my love of Chris Cornell with my friends.
No, that's actually been one of the worst parts of 2018. The Kacey Musgraves album, Golden Hour, my favorite album of the year. It's why I'm obsessed with new music. Like, I love music. We all love music around this table. I'm obsessed with new music, and I'm continuously, like, obsessed with finding new music. And this is a good example why, because I never would have expected to like a modern-day mainstream country album. But right before it came out, a lot of people that I trust and respect had really good things to say about it. And I gave it a shot. I wound up listening to it for the first time on a plane to Greece. And the first two songs came on. And I was like, all right, this is like kind of good. Like I can get into it a little bit. And by the end, and by the last song, there were like literally fucking tears in my eyes on a plane. It was pathetic. But I've grown to love the album more and more. I think it's because for two reasons. One, even though it is very kind of mainstream country in certain respects, it's also weird. And there are lots of weird flourishes and weird touches to it. Like, there's in one song, there's a vocoder that sounds like it came out of a Daft Punk album. And there's all these weird little touches. There's all these like open jazz chords that just give it like a kind of a different sound. I also think it's an album about falling in love and falling in love with somebody, but also falling in love with life. And I think in 2018, when so much of the year was garbage and there was so much to feel bad about constantly, that was just a nice little change of pace. It was a nice refresher. My favorite thing about 2018.
I never listened to it.
I don't know if you would like it. I mean, you might like you might like some songs. You might not like others.
It's
but
like country, right?
Well, so Bob, you...
Yeah. Partially,
again,
yeah, some of it.
You, Mance knows you better than I do, but considering I think that you and I have very similar music tastes, like what I know of you, what you like, and I love it, I think you would like it.
Yeah, it's hard not to like.
All right,
it's very popular.
Yeah, there's some stuff in that. Who would you compare her to?
I don't know, because I don't have a good enough knowledge base about what else is going on in country nowadays, right, to compare. But
like Garth Brooks, maybe.
She has a creamy, pretty creamy voice.
Yeah,
she's sultry, but not like not smoky sultry.
It's
just
not
like sweet sultry.
Oh, I'm getting confused.
Just listen to it.
I've only listened to like one song, so I'm really pulling this right out of my ass.
I can't tell if we're describing a singer or like a barbecue sauce, but. There are a couple songs on the album that are like straight popular country, like pop, that you might not like. But there's a lot that's a little bit more subtle, a little bit more like kind of old folky that you might be into.
Do you like Sheryl Crow?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then you'd dig it.
I don't really like Sheryl Crow. I don't know why I said yes.
Really?
I think I wanted to be positive, but
Sheryl Crow's good.
She's fine.
Yeah. I mean, she married Lance Armstrong. That was kind of
covered Sweet Child O' Mine on the Big Daddy soundtrack. I remember that.
I don't think so.
He has less than the regular amount of testicles.
He has no balls or one ball?
He has one.
Yeah, he's good.
All right, Bob. Bob Fisher, next up. Newest member to the Fantasy Baseball League.
There's no music on my list.
Yeah, I have very little pop culture on my list, even though that's the point of the podcast, but it's okay. Do your thing,
Bob. Yeah, I don't know what my pop culture I have on here. The first thing I have, any of you guys even like comic books at all? Is that something?
A little bit.
That, no? A little no. bit?
So I don't dislike them. I grew up, my dad reading to me, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths and The Death and Return of Superman. So, like, those two series had a very formative impact on my childhood. But other than, like, I read some stuff now, but not too much.
Okay, so my number five thing is Tom King's ongoing run on Batman, which led to Batman and Catwoman getting whatever.
Wait, what did they do?
They bang?
You're really hard selling it right now.
You brought us to the edge.
Well,
there.
They're going to get married, and then and then it's some stuff happens, but it's like a very long thing. I've never liked Batman as a character, and I never liked reading Batman comics, but Tom King really, really brought it around. It's really, really good. And he's like 60 or 70 issues into his run. It's political. It's dealing with the brutality, reactionary issues within violence in these things. So it's I like it. It's good. Number four is a nice windbreaker. You get a nice windbreaker.
Theoretically, or did you actually get a nice windbreaker?
Or do you like the concept of windbreakers?
Right. It's the concept of windbreakers. So wait a minute.
Okay. Is that something?
Write a list of the best things of the year, and you don't have the thing.
Well, look, there's some qualifying issues here, right? Because we have an unseasonably warm December right now, and it's also like rainy. So, like, you get a nice windbreaker that's maybe also waterproof, and then you can. You can go out in this kind of weather and not get sick, and it protects you against the elements. I think what I'm getting at is that it's important to protect yourself against the elements.
2018, the year Bob discovered coats.
I'm not trying to hijack your point here, but it's specifically a bummer to me because one of the top things of 2018 for a couple of us, my cousin got married in Scotland, shout out Real and Tina, and on my way to the airport, I realized I didn't bring a raincoat, so I went to Bill's Work Clothes, and I bought a $50 nice waterproof Carhartt windbreaker.
Fuck,
it was the nicest one I ever had in my life. Wore it to Scotland, got dumped on in Edinburgh, saved my life, brought it home. Now it's missing. I lost it.
No. I don't have your windbreaker, Matt. I think you're making my point for me that it's like the nice windbreaker.
It changes exactly your life.
It was a highlight for you, and then you got to protect yourself from the elements. That's what I'm saying. You'll get a cold.
I thought the story was gonna go a different way because when we were in Scotland, we were like prepared for rainy weather the entire week, and like we had a beautiful week of weather for the most part, way nicer and way sunnier and way clearer for the most part than I expected.
It was gorgeous. But you got dumped on 2 days.
That's why you
do what Bob is suggesting you
Number
do.
Four. So is it a 2019 goal to actually own one of these?
Yeah, I'm going to get one of those windbreakers.
Maybe it'll crack the top three next year if he owns a windbreaker.
I'm going to update you guys because it's like a seasonal thing. You can wear a windbreaker in the summer too.
I wasn't going to. No, you can't.
Well, it's a windbreaker.
I wasn't going to get you a. I wasn't going to get you a Christmas gift this year, but maybe now.
Well, then my work here is done. I think we can close this podcast up.
All right, Bob, what's your number three?
Setting up a Patreon account for Bob's windbreaker, by the way. cageclub.com/Patreon/Bob/
windbreaker.asp
/ breaker.
I got some ideas for a Patreon at the end of this thing. We'll get to that.
We do have a Patreon, patreon.com/cageclub, if you want to contribute to the network. Bob, what's your number three?
My number three is, and I think you guys have very different opinions about this, but is the documentary from John Boyes and Felix Biederman, Fighting in the Age of Loneliness, which is an MMA, a documentary
MMA. Yeah.
Did you watch the whole thing?
No, I watched the first two episodes.
Did you watch the whole thing?
No, I watched the trailer.
I watched the whole thing.
I watched the whole thing,
and then I listened to the podcast where they kind of talked about it afterwards.
I have no interest in MMA at all. Right. I'm kind of grossed out by that sort of violence. But like the thing that I like about the documentary, and this is one of my favorite things in the world, is like tricking douchey people into watching something that they think they're going to like and then laying a very hardcore political point on them. And it does that really, really well. It talks about the exploitation and all of those sort of like a lot of Marxist-ish points about that. And it's Felix Biederman from the Chapo Trap House and John Boyes from Chart Party. Is that what it's called? On SB Nation?
SB Nation, yeah.
SB Nation. There are some aesthetic things that it lacks I think that's what that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
But I think the overall the writing is really strong, and I showed it to a class full of students, and it made them all laugh really hard in multiple parts.
That's great. That's awesome.
You know what's funny? Yeah, I mean, like I wouldn't say that I was disappointed by it, but like I didn't consider it from what you just said. Like it had a stated or unstated objective of hitting a certain audience a certain way, and that totally retroactively and instantly makes me like it more than I did when I sat down at the table. Only because I was like excited for it when I heard it was coming out, and only because I had just discovered like, you know, this Felix Biederman and Chapo and all that stuff, and I was like, oh cool, like let's get some momentum on being a fan of these guys. And I loved that 1770-76 thing, and like aesthetically that thing was so like ambitious and crazy and like indiscernibly weird, whereas when this one kind of laid it out so like
traditionally
and even the subject matter was very traditional, the fact that the visuals were very repetitive and like not really necessary for anything,
that's right,
I was a little bummed out by that, which even if they're trying to achieve the goal that you stated, like then it should be more flashy, you know, it should disguise itself a little bit better. I think being like a weird repetitive,
it looks as though to me it looks almost as though it were like, it's very low budget, it's a YouTube documentary, right, made up of like you know, essentially like graphic design. It's not like they're not licensing anything.
I don't know exactly what the division of labor on this project was, but typically on John Boyce's stuff for SB Nation, like he writes, produces, does all the graphics. Like
I assumed it was his hand the whole time. Yeah, like, that's what I assumed.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But just seeing what he had done before, I was like, oh, well, this is just weird and kind of the same thing. And just like, it seemed a little overly self-important because it kept reminding you, it was like, part one. Here's where you are in the general, in the larger story.
I like that stuff. You're
only here. Yeah. I mean, it's like a map before like a Tolkien book, but like,
I guess so.
That much. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm bogarting you.
No. It's totally, it's cool. Should we move on to
number two?
Number two is Axl Rose's Twitter feed.
Yes!
Let me read some of my favorite excerpts from Axl Rose's Twitter feed. What defies law and common sense is Jeff Sessions himself. Okay, there's another one where someone named Bishop Talbert Swan posted a thing of a 12-year-old entrepreneur selling his rap CD at the mall, and he was detained by a cop who said, "You're 12, you're about to go to jail." And Axl Rose responded by saying, "Come do that to me, you fucking pussy. I'll be waiting." As though Axl Rose is selling his CD at the mall. Axl's selling his bootleg CD at the mall, and these cops are going to arrest him.
Hey, Bob, I want you to tell the podcast listeners what the stylistic choices of Axl Rose is.
Oh, I'm getting there.
Okay, good.
Okay, ready? "Most of us in America have never experienced anything this obscene at this level in our lifetimes. And if we as a country don't wake up and put an end to this nonsense, now it's something we definitely will all pay hard for as time goes on," right? And Axl employs what I'll say is the GNR style of every time he says R.
He uses
the letter R. And every time he says "and," he goes with an N apostrophe. And he sticks with this aesthetic through the most serious of all tweets, including tweets about Khashoggi, tweets about like all the most serious things, like children being put in cages at the border. He's like truly dedicated to a brand. And you can't, like, I'm going to hit this point again and again over the next couple weeks. Like, you should expect there to be like a little like sidebar part of this podcast that's like just Axl's Twitter feed.
Oh, God.
That's number two. And number one is a book that I don't know. I actually don't know how popular it is. Not on that many of these lists, but it's The Overstory by Richard Powers, which is sort of like a book about environmentalism and why it's important.
Is that the book that you said that if a list doesn't include that one, the list should be thrown out?
Yeah. If it's not on the list, like, I don't think it was on the New York Times best best books of 2018 list. And like, the New York Times is obviously just like trash anyway, right? We're done with the New York Times as a group.
Yeah, it's funny because it's still my homepage when I open my browser, and I haven't read even a headline.
Yeah,
in months.
Yeah, so I don't know if we don't like them on there. They seem to be just full of shit about everything. So like, why would we trust them about what the best books are?
Their crossword puzzle is great.
Yeah, shout out to Will Shorts.
I'm on a 125 day streak right now.
You know, I think Matt and I, when we were in study hall my senior year of high school, I think there was one day when we did the crossword puzzle and everything else on that page and completed it in one study hall period. Me, you, Dan Bisti, and Joe Daraki.
Like a hard copy of the New York Times?
Yeah, I think so.
Did you bring that?
I don't remember.
Because not only they had it. They run off copies of the Asbury Park Press. Oh, yeah.
Have I this whole time thinking that we had done the New York Times exactly the Asbury Park Press?
I mean, you could totally see half of the family circle fucking, or the family circus strip right next
shit.
To it.
Okay, new number one. Family circus. The most consistently funny.
Shout out Bill Keane.
He's got to be dead, right? It's his kid running it, right?
That was, yeah, he passed the torch.
Yeah.
Or they grabbed the torch off of his lifeless body, whatever, however it worked.
Another great list. Thank you, Bob. Hey. All right, Matt Erdely, the co-commissioner of our
I expect a little more optimism out of your list.
do you know Bob? I know. Matt Erdely, co-commissioner with me of our fantasy baseball league. Matt, what are your top five favorite things?
All right, so I made a list before. I did a top 10 ranking, and then I had a separate list of, like, I just wrote everything down that I liked, and some of them I was like, all right, let me do the top 10 and do some honorable mentions. But because we're just doing five, I'm just going to pick five that I wanted to highlight, and I'll just briefly sidebar mention Jake DeGrom, Cy Young, fucking A, let's go. Let's go Mets.
LGM.
Yeah, and movie-wise, shout out Buster Scruggs, too. That shit's great. First part of it is the best shit ever.
It is really good at the beginning.
All right. First thing I'll mention, big-ass scallops that me and Lisa got at this place, Local 130 in Asbury Park. We were staying at my mom's over the summer. Went to the fish market, and we went in, and I'm like, I'm going to get some scallops or whatever, see what they got. And he had these fucking scallops that were like the size of your fist. And I was like, all right, give me, you know, six of those scallops. It was fucking like $40. Anyway. Grilled them, marinated them, grilled them, and it was by far, without a doubt, the best thing that I ate all year. I still dream about that fucking meal, partially because I made it myself, partially because I fucking love scallops in the summertime.
I also love scallops. I'm very curious. How did you make them?
So I brought them into the kitchen, put them in a little rant. I brought them into the kitchen. I put them in my hand. I used the other hand to open the door. I walked in the door. That's the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Let me take notes here.
Remember that?
Okay, bring them into the kitchen. And then
So marinate them in...
First, buy a house.
olive oil, salt, pepper, and lemon.
Okay.
For like 2 hours in the fridge. And some cilantro.
All right.
And then get the grill hot, clean it.
Grill.
Outside. Get the grill hot, clean it.
Get that grill hot.
Rub some olive oil on it.
Yeah.
And then
rub that grill down.
Cook them like hamburger patties. They were massive.
Wow.
All right.
Is that your number? What number is that? Five or four? Or three?
That's just. I mean,
they're just things.
Wait, no. Let me clarify. I have five of my list of things that I'm going to mention, but I have one clear number one.
Okay.
So I only have one ranked thing.
Okay.
Everything else is just whatever. The guy who played Han Solo in Solo,
Alden Ehrenreich,
surprisingly excellent.
Wow.
That movie. So
controversial.
So in retrospect, I saw The Last Jedi in the theater. Thought it was great. Loved Leia flying through space and loved the whole silent Death Star getting shot in the air. Star Destroyer getting blown in half.
Spoilers.
Loved it. Fuck spoilers. Yeah. And then I watched it for
a second time.
And I hated every single second of that movie. Except for the sound-free like thing blasting through the thing. I hated every scene. I hated every fucking line of dialogue. I think it's a piece of shit. I hate that movie. With that in mind, I totally ignored Solo when that came out. And I was just like, fuck it. That's horse shit. And all the stories you heard about how you needed an acting coach and they switched directors.
Yep.
I'll say this. That is the best new Star Wars movie by a mile. Since they started remaking those movies, Solo's the best one, and that guy is fucking awesome. Also, Donald Glover's amazing as a young...
And that kid is also the best part of Hail Caesar, too.
Yeah, he's great.
Bit of Twa so simple.
He's great, and he got a lot of shit, and the fact that they're not making those type of Star Wars movies anymore... I mean, my official word on it is I don't give one fuck. But, like, it's a shame that he has to bear that cross. He was great, so that's what I have to say about that.
I thought it was okay.
Oh, I fucking loved it.
I really liked it.
I'll go on.
But I really like most things.
You'll probably get onto some of that other stuff, so I won't mention the pop culture-y stuff. All right.
Not really.
Funniest joke of the year was Trump's Cohen tweet.
Oh, yeah.
Boy. Yeah. That was a good one.
I encourage anyone seeking legal counsel to not retain the services of Michael Cohen. Like, it was. That is a good delivery of a fucking joke.
That was more of a Bernie Sanders impression than
You're right. You're right.
I appreciate it, though.
You're right.
They're both from New York.
Yeah. But and they have the same general panache.
They're both old, straight, white men.
They're off the grid. in one way or another. But
one
yeah,
of them is no, good listen, and one of them is evil.
Respect where respect is due. That fucking was a great... The dude just flipped on him. He had spent like the last 6 months defending his honor, and then the dude immediately flips on him. So he that's a good joke.
That's a good joke.
It's the best joke of the year.
Oh, boy.
You got to see that. You got to see the material past the window pane, man.
It was a good joke.
Agree to disagree.
wait. But why is it not objectively an alien looking at it and getting only the situational context? How is it not a good joke?
All he's doing is saying the opposite of what he means. It's just like regular irony. You can do that with anything.
But he's the president of the United States. He's talking like that's the
doesn't
situation.
Make it more funny.
It makes it. It does. The whole thing is that's the context. Insanity. The whole thing is insanity. And you're watching this guy throw these like supposedly like witty, like he thinks he's witty and he thinks he's on top of it and he's just throwing haymakers in every conceivable direction. And in this particular case, because he's personally wounded and it's as close as he's going to get to self-deprecating, that's on display in a simple like Catskills fucking style. But damn, like it's a good fucking, whatever.
The context of
I understand why someone would not like that joke.
If he wasn't making the world actively worse.
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah,
there'd be a lot to appreciate about the situation that we're in right now.
Okay.
We are white, straight men, anti Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, we all have beards. Anti Donald Trump says something.
Do we all have beards? Fuck. All right.
podcast over. Only one wounded. Of us is flannel though, so I mean, there's something there.
There's flannel, sweatshirt, T-shirt. Sweater, yeah. All representations of our
no windbreaker.
The other thing I want to mention, movie wise, the moment of the year, the single moment of watching a movie that I will remember probably longer than anything else I've seen in the last 5 years.
Mr. Hands.
And I don't know if this is a spoiler if people have seen this or not, but the Peter Jackson World War One thing where he they shall not grow old, where he takes the old
colorized
footage.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's 2018, so it's the 100-year anniversary of the armistice, and I'm always fascinated, obviously the Dan Carlin podcast, and like I've always just been completely fascinated by it's
history.
The Wizard of Oz to me, it was the first time I could imagine what maybe that felt like to somebody who had never seen a color movie before and went to the theater and like was just had their pants pulled down and just got their mind blown.
Well, what do you think happens to the theater?
Mind blown, not pantsed. Whatever.
You know when you go to the movie theater and they pull your pants down?
But he takes... To say that he colorized and to say that he slowed down existing footage is a complete... It's just it's a mile off the mark of what you experience when you see the transition... At the like, 15
I've never even heard of
so.
This. This is not something I was aware of
it's
at all.
It's not really out yet.
Yeah,
it's going to be released in theaters on the 27th and 17th, and that's it. It was out for one day in the UK, and then it ran on BBC for a while. Okay. There's a moment where it transitions from the type of footage you've seen before, where it's like all sped up and grainy, and it's just it looks like you're looking at a otherworldly thing.
And you're saying there's one moment in there.
Because it happens. It doesn't give away the ghost early. It starts with
black and white,
the same vibe that you're kind of used to. And then there's this. There's just a moment, and it's absolutely stunning. You literally see like people come to life on the screen, and you see ghosts. And then the story that he puts together. He hired voiceover people. He identified the patches on the guys' uniforms and like recognized where what town they'd be from, and then hired voiceover people from that town to like lip read and fill in the background. And it just it's an incredible moment of film watching, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
And
to
this
anybody.
Is the film The Mortal Engines by Peter Jackson.
Yes, Peter Jackson's other film this year, The Mortal Engines. Matt, was that your number one?
No. Number one was the kids getting rescued out of the cave in Thailand. If there was ever a thing that happened to planet Earth that everyone was just like, yeah, I needed that. Everything about it was lovely. Elon Musk tried to do
that. Were they rescued by a pedophile, though?
Yeah, right, exactly. That? But it had everything. It had entertainment. It had horse shit scandal. It had uplift. It was days long. You're on the edge of your seat the whole time. Everyone was at least partially emotionally invested in it. Across the planet, probably, at the same time. What a thing!
It reminded me of the Chilean cave.
Yeah,
guys.
Exactly.
It reminded me of that. Yeah,
exactly.
Like every now and then you get something that like worldwide everyone's just concerned about.
Yeah. Well, what was coolest about this one? It was guys trapped in a cave, but then they're even kids, so it's even more sad. But this one had like a lot of science involved too. Like I guess the cave extraction did too. But I remember just like when they would show those like charts of what the caves looked like. It's like, oh, that's pretty. Never thought about that. Under some mountains, there's this. Yeah. That's how the system works. And those fucking
get some more kids trapped in caves. That way we can be.
Yeah, everyone go look in the caves nearby, and check them out.
Cool,
yeah. Man.
And my list. Normally, I think I would say in most years my kind of list would be like more pop culture based. But I feel like I've done a lot of actual things this year, like lived actual life for the first time in a while, and so my things are more. I know, right? Clap, clap. But my number five is the movie Paddington 2.
Fuck you, Joey.
Which not only do I just love, but I also love what it means to this group. Like, there's a few movies that, like, have become essentially memes within our fantasy baseball league. That there is Spring Breakers, there is now Paddington 2. And not only do I love both those movies, but I just love that they both will always instill debate and arguments.
I'm never commenting on Spring Breakers again.
Until you watch it. I love that movie. I mean, like, last year, 2017, when Get Out came out in February, and I watched that movie in theaters, I was like, there's a good chance that my favorite movie of the year is one that I saw in February. And I was just like, that, it's crazy. Like, it was so good. And it wound up being like top two or top three or whatever. The movie was so good so early in the year that I was like, I can't imagine many movies, if any, beating this. And then when Paddington 2 came out in January this year, I had that same moment where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to see a better movie this year than this Talking Bear movie.
So I'm going to ask I promise this isn't a snarky question. I mean it genuinely. We've all seen Paddington 2 here, right? You've seen it?
Yeah.
And you saw it too?
Only half of it.
Okay. But you get the gist.
I can't wait to watch the rest of it.
Why?
I think it's so smart and good and pure and just overall, like, it surpasses what a child's movie should be. And I just think that there's, like, it just...
Wait, what do you mean by that? Like, technologically and effort-wise? Like,
I think in terms of, like, you know, I don't watch a lot of kids' movies because I don't have kids. I'm sure you've seen Frozen 1,000 times this year. You've seen My Neighbor Totoro 1,000 times this year. But, like, I think that, you know, there's a couple movies that, like, anyone can enjoy. And I think that this is a movie that whether
My Neighbor Totoro is one of them.
Yeah.
Well, that was where I was going to go with it.
Too, probably. That's what I'm trying to say. Like,
that's the benchmark for
there's
me.
There's certain movies, I think, that, like, because you could, like, I'm sure there's even, like, you know, Pixar has a really high success rate. But, like, you can't watch, like, The Good Dinosaur more than, like, once or twice without wanting to maybe never see that movie again or maybe see any movie. You know what I mean?
I fell asleep in the theater watching The Good Dinosaur.
Although there is a moment where both the kid and the dinosaur trip on acid in the movie, and like that's in the movie, and it's kind of incredible.
Just let me just also point out, when you have kids, whether you want to watch a movie more than twice, like, you know, learn that lesson right quick.
But I just think that it's so good and so smart, and I think that, like, there's callbacks later in the movie, and like I'm just really looking forward to seeing it again in the next couple of weeks to like finalize.
How many times have you actually seen it?
I've only seen it twice. So I haven't seen like a ton, but I also don't watch movies more than once a lot. And when I see a movie more than, because there's so many movies that I want to see for the first time, that when I feel like, and again, this is not like patting myself on the back, but I just think that in terms of how I watch things, when I take the time to watch something a second time, like, it's special to me. Also, for that record, I just watched Assassination Nation today, which is a movie that I think, like Spring Breakers, will probably anger more people than will like capture what I love about it. But that might be my favorite movie of the year. It's so goddamn weird and unique and singular and special, and just like, it's 2018 in a movie, really, in for good and bad things.
Not Paddington 2. Assassination
Nation. Caves?
No. Oh. But it's
are there windbreakers?
Maybe. Possibly.
Hugh Grant was really good in Paddington.
Hugh Grant is
too.
Really good.
I'll say that.
And the show-stopping dance number, you know, at the end. Number four. My fourth thing is just growing the podcast network as in general. You know, we started 3 years ago, me and my friend Mike.
It's an empire now.
It was one show in 2015, and then we added three in April 2016. Now we're up to 23 or 24 shows. Like, it's crazy to me. You know, we still don't have like a massive fan base, but just the amount of people, the amount of effort it takes to just keep this ship afloat. Like, I spend a lot of time doing this kind of stuff, and it means so much to me to have like these friendships. And like, you know, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the network. You know what I mean? Like, we would maybe be hanging out because it's my birthday. Spoilers.
So
what's a spoiler for? Aging?
Yeah.
So, dear listener, feel free to go to patreon.com/cageclub and donate a dollar.
Mm-hmm. I have some ideas for the Patreon.
Because there's a lot of work being put into this empire of podcasts. And fucking pay for content, wouldn't you?
And last time Joey provided snacks. This time he did not. So I can only assume that the profits...
The financial situation is dire.
It's a different financial situation. No, it was mostly that I had a party the week before last time. And now I haven't seen people in person in a while. And so it was a different overall vibe.
We're at the end of Q4. Funds are really...
Truly.
They're out the door.
So that's number four. Number
we
three...
We didn't eat so much goddamn smart food last time around. There might have been some left for this one.
Number three, trigger warning. I'm sorry, Mance. But number three is winning the Fantasy Baseball League this year.
Ah, God damn it.
It's just... Hey. We all spend so much time and so much effort on this stupid thing for not that much. I mean, like, it's a lot of money, but like the amount of effort we put into it for like the payoff that we get, it's not, you know, it's a
what
lot
are you
of
looking at me for? I'm not a gift horse.
It's an unrealistic.
I'm looking
unrealistic,
at you because I can't look at Mance is why I'm looking to the right.
It's an unhealthy emotional commitment.
You can't win it and then call it stupid.
No, I said the amount of time is stupid. I'm not saying the league is stupid. I love this league.
I plan on winning this year.
All right. Well, we will see you at the draft. But
you've
just
got the amount of guile necessary.
I accidentally got drunk, like while doing this. So I don't know how it happened, but
I just love it. The league itself, like even if I don't win, like I still love the fact that we have a message thread that annoys me more often than like entertains me, but like it's just so good to have like a group of people that like when I have something to share with people and I don't know who to share it with, like there's somebody who will care or somebody who at least like humor the notion of like clicking on a link or something. So it just, you know, thank you all for being
so your real favorite thing is human connection,
basically.
Yeah.
Surrounded by
just with
that
cup
of the corner.
Human connection where I'm deemed the winner.
Yeah. I'm the best human.
Hey, no, that's a nice year. It's a nice thing to happen in a year.
Number two, going to Scotland.
Tom wouldn't know.
Your cousin's wedding, Real and Tina. Shout out Real and Tina.
Aforementioned, yeah.
It was very expensive.
Shout out Tina. Forget Real.
Tina's the best.
They may be living in the United States of America by the time this podcast hits the streets.
No, this podcast will be out this year, you know. It was such a good week. I mean, it was an expensive week, but it was just so much fun, and like the weather couldn't be better, and like going to bars, making friends with like random Scottish people, because everybody over there is nice, and we're just like in this tiny, idyllic seaside town, and we basically took over the town, and just going to restaurants and seeing like other people in the wedding group like there because there's only like four places to eat. And like it's just such a weird, cool destination. Weddings can be like obnoxious, but this one, when you're there with so many friends and people that you want to spend time with, it's just awesome.
Lovely.
It was a great week.
And my number one favorite thing, more expensive than Scotland, was buying a house. I just think, you know, I never knew if it was something that I wanted. But now that I bought it, I'm just like, I can't. Like, this is, like, I lucked into this place, I think. Like, this is, compared to what other places in this area that, like, what this cost, this is, I got lucky, so.
Do you think you'll die here?
God, I hope not.
It's a great place.
Well, thank you. And, you know, speaking of our fantasy baseball league, I'm hosting the draft here in 3 months, so we will have many more loud assholes, straight white men.
There's a terrifying amount of Nicolas Cage here.
Most of
in
these,
this house.
I don't buy. So, like, that was a gift. The blanket was a gift.
Don't.
The
don't.
Doormat was a
Joey.
Gift.
Also, when you say that, when you say that was a gift, no one knows what you're talking about.
The fan art from England was a gift. The blanket was a gift from my sister. The floor mat was a gift from my friend.
I mean, the fact that everybody's first instinct when they want to buy you a gift is to buy you a Nick Cage. It helps prove my point more than
sure. No, one of the saddest things.
You're also wearing a shirt with Nicolas Cage's face on it right now.
You named your podcast network after Nicolas Cage.
When I had my housewarming, like I had five or six people send me a link to this like Nicolas Cage sequin pillow where like you could rub the sequins and it would show his face, like it was just like his face hidden behind sequins, and I was like, I'm gonna have so many of these pillows, and then not one person bought it for me. They were just like taunting me with the idea of this
hear
gift.
That Joey's friends,
yeah,
buy me a pillow.
All right, so we're getting
hold on real quick, should we all just blast out worst thing of 2018? My vote, Colin Jost, head writer of SNL. Fuck that guy. He sucks.
Pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Yeah. I'm not a fan either, but I don't know. Worst thing about 2018? That's a tough one. There are a lot of really bad things about 2018.
I got one. Hold on. Both of my parents
outside
died.
Of the, all right. So we're cutting that.
Both of them in a couple months.
It's true.
October and June. Tom, what was your thing?
Clearly Colin Jost.
I mean, yeah, that too. Calling you out, Colin Jost. Get your ass down here. I'll fuck you up.
How many parents you got, Colin?
Get in the ring, motherfucker.
Fighting in the age of loneliness against a mall security guard for
fighting in
CD.
The age of SNL sucking dicks.
All right, well, we will see you in 2 weeks for our 100 to 81.
Joe, countdown. You cannot cut any of that out.
I'm not going to. The top of the bottom 20 of the 100 greatest songs of the 80s and 90s coming in 2 weeks right here on cageclub.me.
Listen to the rain on the roof go pit pitty pat,
pit pitty pat,
pitty. Sit kitty cat, we won't get home for hours. Relax and.